Our next case this morning is Gore against Indiana University.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether the district court overlooked the legitimate considerations of the Mills case that were submitted in the plaintiff's response to defendant's motion for summary judgment and did provide sufficient background circumstances in order to make Indiana University that employer who would discriminate against a majority employee.
Mr. Thomas, my understanding right off the bat is that when the committee gets its revised list of the people who are going to be interviewed, which includes one man and two women, it's Mr. Hosterman who gets hired. So we start out, let's say, with a really uphill climb to show that Indiana University is inclined to discriminate against men for this particular position since it hired a man.
Well, there were three positions.
Well, eventually, but the first is there's a little bit of time lapse, and the first one they hire is a man. Now, then, you're correct, they go on and hire two women. But I just have a hard time, just on the face of things, seeing this as some evidence that suggests that the reason behind Mr. Gore's lack of success was related to his gender, as opposed to simply, you know, the ups and downs of creating interview lists and the interview process.
Well, you are correct that Mr. Hosterman was hired initially. However, he had a different status with the university than Mr. Gore did at that particular time. He had taught upper-level courses in communication. Of course, Mr. Hosterman had a master's degree in communications.
Well, all three of the people hired had master's degrees
in
communications. That's
correct. Right? However, the posting for that position did not require a master's degree in communication.
But why does that mean Indiana University can't prefer candidates with this particular degree? Isn't that what academic institutions do? I mean, they decide.
It's kind of like a poker game. You have to have jacks or better to open, but having jacks or better doesn't give you the shot at it. Somebody may have three kings.
Well, that's a good hand in poker. I hope it doesn't hold here today. But in any event, the other.
What I meant was the minimum requirement is different than the fact that the applicants might have a superb, more than minimum.
When they gave six candidates, of which Mr. Gore was one of the six, and they. Patty Dees then sent it back and said, we want the most qualified candidates. And the search and screening committee then decided that the most qualified candidates were those with terminal degrees in communications. She sent in a list of that. And then Ms. Dees and the Vice Chancellor Guillaume sent her back a list saying, what makes you think that people with terminal degrees are the most qualified people for this position? You need to look at other factors. So having that to be the background, then Mr. Gore, the person that they hired for the last position, which, by the way, is the position that Mr. Gore was holding at the time that he applied for this position. He was the director of this basic lecturer course, and that meant there were 26 sections underneath his supervision. He was supervising six instructors, as well as carrying a full instruction load himself, and he is somehow not qualified. Not the most qualified person.
Right, most qualified. And, you know, we've said we have to be cautious about that. He didn't have a tenured position. Nobody was firing him from anything. It's just that when the new pool was considered, other people seem to have come to the top.
But here's the problem with that. Back in January or February of 2002, the Search and Screening Committee initially interviewed Ms. Vernon, who eventually got the last position, and specifically stated, and we point out in our brief, in their inner office voicemails, that her credentials did not suit the requirements of that course at Indiana University at that time. Yet they hired her over Mr. Gore, who was in fact teaching that course, which showed that she didn't have the proper credentials.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe you could respond to what your opponent says about that argument. You make that argument, to be sure. They say, yes, there are eventually three positions, but they aren't absolutely fungible, and that comment was made about Ms. Vernon with respect to a somewhat different position.
No, it was the lecturer position.
Well, they're all lectures, but...
It was the same course, basic entry-level speaking, public speaking course. And it was the same, her application was submitted in the same pool with Mr. Gore's. Mm-hmm. So when they said that about her, they said that about her in January when there were one or two or three, and eventually in March of that year, when they decided to fill the last position, all of a sudden, her credentials match the teaching of this basic lecture course, of which before they didn't say, they said she was not eligible to wasn't suitable for the teaching requirements at IUSB at that time. In addition, when they went before the EEOC and responded to Mr. Gore's complaint, they then flip-flopped and came back and said, well, you know, the most qualified people are the people with terminal degrees in communications. And the point about that was is that there's specifically the memo saying that they were not necessarily most qualified. In addition, they rely on a business standards School of Business Standards policy by saying that people with terminal degrees in specific fields make better teachers in business, and then somehow brought that to play in the communications department. And the reason for that is because the communications department doesn't have such standards. And so they argue by analogy to justify their position that a person without a terminal degree was not the most qualified, when you have a person who has excellent evaluations from students. He's been teaching that course for 4 years. He coordinated the course and is, in fact, applying for the position that he is actually holding. Another interesting point, that in the position of coordinator of the basic lecturer courses, when they posted that job, they then went to a PhD or almost a, or what they call everything
ABD.
All but right. Dissertation.
All but dissertation. Now, Mr. Gore got great evaluations from his coordination of that course, even though he only had a master's degree, and it was in education as opposed to communications. And so now they have upgraded that job to require a PhD or all but dissertation. And all of a sudden, he's not qualified to have the lecturer position that he's carried out and held at the same time that he had all these other responsibilities, as well as teaching, as well as coordinating the six instructors, as well as all of the other sections. So we feel that there was, as Mills stated, that there was something fishy about the process, in the sense that he got a letter saying, I'm going to be interviewed. Then they said, you're not going to be interviewed. And then he never got any notification that he wasn't interviewed, or he didn't get the job until he had to inquire about it himself. Then they come up with the justification that he's not the most qualified, when in their internal memos they're saying, well, terminal degrees are required, terminal degrees aren't required. So the point is that we feel...
What is your best reason to think that any of this has to do with sex, as opposed to the normal give and take that goes into figuring out how to staff a position?
I think, as Mill states, all we have to show is that there was some unusual procedure in the selection process.
Anything unusual. I see the normal kind of give and take. People are out to get the best they can. What is your best reason to think that the real reason was sex?
Because there was a less qualified female that was hired for the position. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Malley.
May it please the court. My name is John Malley, counsel for Indiana University, respectfully requesting that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. It should be for three reasons. First of all, the unusual background circumstances argument advanced on appeal now by Mr. Gore was not presented in the district court and has such been waived. Secondly, on the merits, which have been discussed so far today, this is a fairly typical employment case where Mr. Gore did not receive the position that he desired and now asks federal courts to second-guess that employment decision, yet has no evidence of male discrimination. And third, the court need not reach this issue, but if it did, in terms of adverse employment action, his deposition testimony is that he was only desirous of the interview, not the job itself.
Well, but that's silly. I mean, you can't say that that Indiana University could announce, we've decided not to interview any African Americans for this position, and that's it. I mean, the interview is the step into the job, just as...
Certainly it is, Your Honor, but in deposition, the question was posed to Mr. Gore.
But
what is your case about?
Of course he wants the interview. No, I mean, that's kind of a silly argument that I think...
You don't want to pursue this.
No, I mean, the implications would be staggering for discrimination law if employers were free to refuse.
In the country, they say that dog won't hunt. Now I'll try something else.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Right, exactly.
On the merits, first some
facts. Maybe you could address the fact that I was discussing with your opponent, which is this comparable question, Ms. Vernon and Mr. Gore. I understood from your brief that the internal memo saying that she didn't really have the right match to the position in question was referring to a somewhat different position. He says, no, not at all. In fact, it was the identical position that Mr. Gore held. And I'd like your comment on that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, the record is undisputed on this point. There was initially one position that was at issue for lecture in February of 2002. I've cited to the court various record sites that established that, and there's no contest on that point from Mr. Gore. Four interviews occur. Mr. Hosterman is recommended for and ultimately up the ladder is hired for that position. Later, the communications department gets more budgetary authority and has two additional positions.
Now, are they for pretty much the same kind of lecture slot, teaching
they are,
the same class?
They are lecture positions within the communications area. However, as with most universities, Indiana University South Bend has already now put Mr. Hosterman, who has upper-level and broad-based experience, in the first position. Now, then, they've got additional authority for other lecture positions. Okay? The title is simply lecture. What you know about that is it's a one-year, non-tenured position. They then, this is now late in the process, we're now into mid-April, trying to hire someone to start in late August, early September. Go back to the original pool, a number of people have dropped out. There's some personal reasons. They've gotten other positions. So they go back into the original pool, and that pulls in then Ms. Vernon, who back at the time, the comment was simply back in February, that her teaching areas did not match the university's current needs. Now in mid-April, when they open it back up, when several of the top four candidates had disappeared, including Mr. Hosterman, the male who was first hired by the 60% male-composed committee. She's now included in that list. She meets the minimum requirements, which is all that those were to have a master's degree, but she exceeds those by also having a master's in communications. And, in fact, the university can appropriately, in its business judgment, prefer more than just the minimums, and that's what occurred here. There's no question otherwise. There's no evidence suggesting otherwise. So when opposing counsel suggests that the same time that she was interviewed, that's factually not accurate. The record is clear that first in February, That was the Hosterman position. Additional authority came open in the spring. And
now, are you suggesting that they expand the pool because people have dropped out and they've dipped down lower? And if that's a suggestion, then why doesn't Mr. Gore come back into the pool in April?
As explained in the record by, for instance, Ms. Steck, a 30-year member of the university, a number of years, been on a number of search committees, they did not deem, in their judgment, Mr. Gore to be among the most qualified. Those who were hired and recommended had master's degrees in communications. And we look at the course
issue.
Description, Your Honors, which, for instance, is at Supplemental Appendix 30. Candidates able to teach visual communication, public speaking, human communication theory, business and professional communication, nonverbal organizational communication, journalism, etc. This is more than just entry level. They wanted to have someone who could teach those courses. Someone who has a master's degree in communication versus someone who has a master's degree outside of communication is, it's reasonable for the university to conclude, is going to be more apt to be able to teach broadly in those areas. And the record is undisputed on that. So what we have is a simple employment case where the plaintiff is not happy about not getting the position but has no evidence and admits the only evidence that he has is I'm a man. And he, in fact, he was mistaken. He said there were three women hired. In fact,
no, he's correct. He is a man.
I did not see otherwise, Your Honor.
That
he, in his brief, he asserted in his deposition, he asserted, well, he thought that there were only three women hired. And, in fact, it's undisputed that the first hire was Alec Hosterman. The committee was appointed by a male. It was male composed primarily, 3 to 5. The vice chancellor is a male. One of the three candidates was a male. There's simply nothing unusual about this, and it is the ordinary give and take. So respectfully request that this court would affirm the judgment below for those reasons. If there are no further questions, I'll rest. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Maley. Anything further, Mr. Thomas?
I would refer, Your Honors, to the Appendix 21 in our brief where it talks about the lecturer position. I don't know what he was reading, but it says ability to teach a minimum of 3 courses within the area of record of scholarly, creative, and professional achievement, evidence of teaching effectiveness, strong letters of recommendation. In their posting, it said a master's degree is required for the lecturer position. Our requirements, that's on page 2 of our brief. Our requirements include a distinguished record of scholarly, creative, and professional achievement, teaching, and service. Assistant professor or a lecturer will assume the duties of the director of public speaking in the basic course. This was the same class. He wants to make you believe that this was a different class in April than it was in January. It was the same introductory lecturer position, of which Mr. Gore would have been more than happy to take on in the following fall as a full-time one-year position. I'd ask the court to reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.